Okay, hello everyone. Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are. Welcome to our lit webinar. And today we have a very interesting topic, and it's about manufacturing and retail perspective on engaging suppliers on inclusion and diversity. We probably hear a lot, probably in on our webinars, either from manufacturing or from the retail perspective. And today we have both from different angles to talk about this very interesting topic on supplier diversity program. And this is part of our Engaging All series, educational webinar series that we have started since early this year. Okay. So, sorry, I have a problem with my presentation again. So I just want to introduce myself. So my name is Putri Realita. I am leading inclusive diversity globally at Danone, based in Paris. And I am also part of the educational committee. And I would also like to, before we start, just to remind you on some rules that you need to activate your audio to your computer. All participants are in listen-only mode. And if we have the Q&A button, if you have questions, please put it in the chat, in the Q&A button, or in the chat. And then this session is being recorded. And screenshots of this session will be made and be shared in the Lead Network website. And just to remind you on the antitrust guidelines, this is the policy that in this kind of forums, we are not allowed to discuss such things, price, sales, market shares, etc., as you can see on the screen. So as I said before, this is part of the Engaging All series webinar, and we will also now in the process of developing the materials and content for the second half of the year. So looking forward to also invite you to all those webinars going forward. Okay, so I would like to introduce our brilliant speakers today. So first, we have Siniat Bell. So Siniat is an experienced commercial leader with a career spanning data sciences, market strategy and planning, and sales roles in retail and food services, as well as trading director roles at Tesco before she joined Co-op in 2019 to lead the fresh and chilled commercial team. She is very passionate about driving inclusion and diversity internally and externally, so that people feel equal, supported, and valued, able to reach their full potential, and to be comfortable being their true selves in the company of others. She is at her happiest collaborating upon courageous end-to-end strategies and building relationships which engage people in meaningful ways and drive sustainable value. She is also a culture changer, a curious optimist, and she is keen to step change how we do business. That's from our retail partner. And then the second one is Jamila from our manufacturing partner. She is the global purchase director, leading supplier diversity and women economic empowerment programs at P&G. Jamila has been with P&G for 19 years. She led many industry transformations from packaging, printing to marketing agencies, and is on a mission to drive impact sourcing. She strongly believes in equality and inclusion built in business strategies versus bolted on, and is committed to leveraging key company assets such as purchasing spend to drive E&I within the company end-to-end supply chain. Day in, day out, she challenges status quo, which I like a lot about her, and norms to drive accelerated change, and all this in partnership with suppliers. We are looking forward to really listen to both of the speakers today. So before we deep dive with the speakers, I would like to know who we have in the audience today. So let's put the first poll questions. Can we have the first polling questions? Okay. So most are in manufacturing, retail, and others. Ah, we have also a lot in others. Good to know. Let's move to the second polling questions. The question is, do you have a supplier diversity program in place? Yes or no? Okay, let's see the results. Oh, 50-50, interesting. More than 50% say no. And the third polling questions, please. Do you engage people across your supply chain on D&I? Meaning people inside the company, but also outside the company, like the community and other stakeholders. Yes or no? Thank you for the answers, great. So most of us here today are engaging also people outside the company. So great news. Okay, thank you for giving us these insights. So very interesting that we have actually almost half, over half of the audience that do not have yet a supplier diversity program. And we have most of the people who are here today have engaged people outside the company for D&I, which is a great news. And I think that we will hear and get insights from Siniat and Jamila about how they created the supply diversity program and what does it mean for them and how we can follow their steps. To make to drive this change in our company. So this is not going to be a traditional presentation mode. So we are going to have some kind of panel discussion. And please feel free to put your questions in the chat or in the Q&A. Then I can see the questions. So we can answer it later in the Q&A session after we finish with the session. So let's start with Siniat here. So from the retail perspective, Siniat, what does supplier diversity, or I don't know if you call it inclusive sourcing nowadays, what does it mean to you?
Great, thank you. So firstly, hello everyone. I hope you're all keeping safe and well. I'm delighted to be joining you all today for this webinar to talk a little bit about the retail perspective on engaging suppliers on inclusion and diversity. And as Puchu mentioned, my name is Sinead Bell and I'm Director of Trading at the Co-op. So this is a great question. There are so many different views on supplier diversity. And I'm really excited to share where we are from a co-op perspective in food and the journey we are on, because this is a journey. And one that we need to constantly drive forwards, evolve, and share learnings on. So we have over 1,000 supplier partners in food retail, and that's not including the end-to-end supply chain. And back in September, we asked ourselves the question, what if we brought inclusion and diversity into the heart of our joint business plans? Effectively, ensuring that it's a prerequisite to how we do business rather than something we work together with along the way. And this led to a collective mission. How can we create inclusive environments internally and externally where people feel equal, understood, supported, valued, and appreciated, that they're able to reach their full potential and to be comfortable being their true selves in the company of others? What if we created a network where everyone can grow? What if we created a network where we can all learn together? It's a program for everyone, by everyone, ensuring that we support each other regardless of brand, own brand, size, scale, reach, category, and region. We want to turn the dial from just talking about inclusion or doing inclusion to being inclusive. And that's every day in every way. So for us, supplier diversity is about putting inclusion, diversity, and belonging at the heart of how we do business. I'll come on later to talk about how this looks, covering the maturity scale of self-assessment, a toolkit of support, case studies on learning, and a shared inclusion calendar to embed collaboration and cooperation and the program we have landed to step forwards on supplier diversity.
Great, thank you so much, Sinia, for sharing these views. And I'm wondering also if Jamila has a different perspective from the manufacturing angle.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, very good. Okay, well, hello, everyone. Again, thank you, Putri, and thanks to Lead for having P&G on the panel today for a topic really that we are very passionate about. But let me start by saying that at P&G, we aspire to create a company and beyond the company, a world where equality and inclusion are achievable for all. You know, our E&I strategy or aspiration is truly a holistic one because, as Sinead mentioned earlier, it is an integrated into business strategy one. And that's the only way to make a meaningful impact, you know, and drive change. And we've decided to focus in four key areas for us. First, we want to do it for our employees. Second, we want to drive this change through our brands. Third, we also want to partner with our external partners, right, to drive this change. And finally, we want to do that for the communities we serve. So we really truly believe in the power of our differences and the impact we collectively can make because we united, you know, through a common and shared values and purpose, we really can, you know, drive the world. So today we will focus, right, on E&I through the lens of manufacturing, as you said, but also through the lens of our external partners, right, an external partnership more general. And we will even double click on it because we will focus on the supply side of our global value chain. Next slide, please. But in essence, what are we really, really talking about here? So I'm glad to hear and to see actually that about half of the audience here is familiar with supply diversity. That will help a lot. But I'm also sad to read that another half doesn't yet have. So hopefully this will be inspirational for the other half to join. And definitely we will have some tools, as Sinead explained, to help bring more people on board. But let me say that today we will cover the importance to drive E&I beyond our own company walls. It's really about becoming more interested and more curious about how our surrounding partners in the supply chain are delivering their business and to which extent they are putting purpose into it. Okay. So now, what is really the objective of all of that? What's the underlying agenda? Well, think about it as this is a way to close the economic divide in the marketplace, really meaning in a B2B context where we're all active in this session, okay? And as you look at the supply chain, there are clearly some groups of suppliers that are underrepresented. So now, if you go to the US, those qualified as underrepresented groups are very well defined thanks to this foundational supply diversity program they have there for more than 40 years. Well, go outside of the US and those definitions, right, those programs are, you know, in place to a very limited extent and specifically in Europe. So just for the little story about P&G, back in 2015, we decided that it was about time to globalize our supply diversity program, moving from a very mature and well-established program in the US, going to anywhere we spend money around the world, right? And, you know, as we started, it was very clear that it couldn't look and feel and be shaped the same way it is in US, because Europe is not US, and what works in US doesn't necessarily resonate in Europe. So we needed to find the sweet spot, meaningful, impactful, and scalable program, you know, while learning our way, because we were literally building the plane while we were flying it, as I think of our European program. And to make it manageable, it was also obvious that we couldn't tackle all of the diverse groups in the US as they are today defined. So we decided to focus first on women and then expand later to what the other definitions in Europe are. So let me just very quickly explain why women mattered and matters and will matter. In the context of entrepreneurship, we do have some gender segregated data available, not a lot, but still enough to demonstrate the case, to do something. Women owned a third of total SMEs in the world, and it's more or less the same everywhere. But they only get 1% of the total spend from corporation. That is a huge imbalance, and that is something we need to do something about. Now, another data point. Think of P&G as one of the largest multinationals. We deal with 60,000 plus suppliers every year. So when you couple all of this information, there are a few things that came to our mind very quickly. First, the need to support women entrepreneurs. Women represent 50% of the population. By the way, you will find in that pot of, in that group of in that group, like the same intersectionalities as you know, the other underrepresented groups, right? We know SMEs are creating most jobs, and women entrepreneurs are little served. So that we need to support more women entrepreneurs. But we also see that 60,000 suppliers, this is becoming like a duty for us to embark them, right? It is not a nice to have anymore to have them join. It is a must have. So if, think of it, if every one of our 60,000 suppliers, or even like a good number of those, are at their turn having a supply diversity program in place and actively moving it on, that will help us move from this 1% to maybe 2%, maybe 3%, and more and more and more until we narrow and finally close this gap. Okay. But we also came to the realization that, at least today, the bulk of our suppliers are not women owned or diverse owned even. And in some industries, E&I is yet, I would say, a theoretical conversation. So we do have a role to play in driving change and helping shift mindsets in everywhere, and specifically in some industries. So, and by that, we also have a role to play in helping diverse groups, not only entrepreneurs, but all talents, getting economically empowered by accessing more jobs in our extended supply chain, by getting equal opportunities to advance in their career. And really to that, we want to work with like-minded partners to invest, as we do in diverse talents internally, to finally close those inequalities. And by the way, as an ultimate consequence, drive better business results. Okay, so all of that take us through what is in the bottom right of the slide, which is this expanded supply definition scope that we've established for P&G. We challenged what were the norms in the US, which were only looking at the first definition related to ownership, right? We still keep that because we believe it's a golden standard. It's a proven standard. So we still will track and will support companies that are owned by diverse groups. And in our case, for now, women. But we also want to accelerate women in leadership positions, right? Because we know that there is an impact, a positive performance impact in those companies. And we know that when a woman is at, you know, decision-making roles, you know, more often than not, she will push down E&I policies and behaviors. And finally, the very most important third definition is, you know, I said, most of our suppliers will not be women-owned or women-led, but we want to make sure that we drive this qualitative conversation with all our suppliers and make sure that we're curious about what are their plans, and we want to celebrate them about their progress when they make progress. So because that ultimately will help really economically empower everyone. So all in all, we're sort of challenged supply diversity definition as we all knew it, because we wanted this to be more holistic. And by such, we're not talking about it anymore as supply diversity, as you, Petri, mentioned earlier. We talk about it as inclusive sourcing. Okay. Now, let me also tell you a bit about the why.
Yeah, that's very interesting on the what, because I think this is where everyone should start, right? To define what does it mean for the company and at Danone ourselves, we are now at this stage. And I think this definition would definitely help us to move forward. Okay, so now we understand the what. But then what's in it for PNG? What's in it for PNG if we have 60,000 suppliers have, recruited women or work with diverse suppliers?
Yes, indeed. And this is really the why, right? Why are we doing that? So I'd like to say first that this is not charity. It is a business proposal. Supply diversity, or as we like to call it now more, inclusive sourcing, is really not only the right thing to do, but it's the smart thing to do because it drives economic growth for all of us, right? First, you know, we all have read about those double-digit $1 trillion GDP growth that could be achieved if we were to close the gender gap. Okay, so if we all contribute to this by implementing, the right internal policies in the workplace and in the marketplace, that will help us get there. Okay, a second strong reason, right, is innovation and performance. What we know is diverse companies, be it owned, land, or led or empowered, they often help us mirror better our consumer base. And by that, they help us understand better what are the tension points. And of course, I respond to those in a very efficient way. In addition to that, you know, when all the women-owned businesses, most of the women-owned businesses I've met in my career, they are rather small, medium-sized, and as such, they are very nimble. They're very cost-efficient. So as a buyer, this matters a lot as well when we talk about performance. And finally, I'd like to say that when you have diverse representation or diverse owned companies, there is a richness in diversity of thoughts, obviously, and they help us connect dots differently, solve problems, you know, in creative and unique ways. So all of that drives better performance and more innovation. But the third one is, I would say the one probably, not, I would not say my preferred, but a funny one, because I feel like everyone is invited to this party. Because all of our stakeholders are asking for the private sector to step up and help solve societal issues, be it the consumers who will vote with their money, be it the youth, you know, who are our future talents, be it our investors, our employees, all, right? And you might have seen the 2021 Edelman Trust Barometer explaining that businesses are the most trusted entity ahead of governments, of NGOs and media. So all eyes on us, right? No time to lose. And finally, right, it is important also to consider the increasing talent shortage. So why should we deprive ourselves from 50% of the available talents out there who are as smart as the other 50%? So there are many more reasons, many more arguments, but I will stop to this four.
Great. Thank you, Jamila, for sharing this. I think for me, it's very connected with me of all these four reasons is the stakeholders ask. And here, as a manufacturing company, suppliers or retailers are actually one of our key stakeholders. So therefore, I would like to ask Sinead, what's in it for retailers? What's in it for you to drive this program?
Great segue, Gucci. So at the co-op, we've set ourselves a really bold vision to cooperate for a fairer world. And that requires all of our colleagues and leaders to bring their diverse talents and expertise to the table to make change happen. From our people policies through to our procurement, from our community plan to our products and services, we will commit all of our assets wholeheartedly to achieving a fairer world. Inclusion at the co-op isn't just a nice thing to do, it's how we do business. And it will make us a stronger and better business. And this is true for all aspects of our business, internally and externally. This means that we'll do our best to operate in a fair way that embraces the differences of our colleagues, our customers, our members, our supply partners, and our communities. With the world that we live in, the need for inclusion and a deeper understanding has never been more relevant. And partnering together to help us to move the dial forward is within our gift to help accelerate these plans. So let me tell you a little bit about the Co-op DNA. What do we stand for as a co-op? Equality and equity are our founding values. Equality is about making sure that everyone has an equal opportunity to reach their potential. And equity is recognizing that people have different starting points and supporting them. We focus on diversity and inclusion, creating an inclusive culture where all differences are celebrated and valued, making diversity work. And we are also anti-discriminatory. We'll continue to be proactive in combating discrimination in all of its forms. And this is supported by our commitments. We promote equality of opportunity for everyone. We'll aim to create a workforce that's representative of our society. We value all our colleagues for their contribution, and we celebrate diversity in all aspects of our business. We want to create a genuinely inclusive workplace where we embrace the similarities and differences of all of our colleagues and partners. We'll support the unique and diverse needs of our customers and our communities. We'll make sure that our suppliers and partners actively support us in having a diverse and inclusive culture. And as I mentioned before, we are against all forms of unlawful and unfair discrimination. So inclusion is about engaging the uniqueness, the talents, the beliefs, backgrounds, abilities, and ways of working of all of our colleagues internally and externally. It's also about working together to create a culture where everyone feels that they belong and are valued and respected. So by being committed to inclusion and diversity, we can have the best people working here, which will help to make the co-op a success.
Great. Thank you. So what I took from both of you is that the why is very clear, because internally it is part of your company's culture and DNA. And of course, creating equal opportunity has to start with internally, right? Internal company. We have to make sure that this happens in our own company with our own employees. And I also take from you that it is not enough to only speak about our own employees and our own company, because and the fact that as a big company operating in many different countries, we are influencing our society, we are influencing the world actually, and we have the power, we have the empowerment to really shape the change into a positive way. And this is an opportunity for us to create that more inclusive world for all of us. So I think that the partnership between manufacturing and retailers are key to make this happen. So great. So thank you for all this sharing. And now we are going into the how. So now we understand the big picture, the reason why, the definitions. But how do we start? Siniat, I give the floor to you. How do retailers do it?
Right. So I can't speak for all retailers, but I can speak for co-op in this instance. So I've talked through what supplier diversity looks like for us at the co-op and why inclusion and diversity is important at the co-op. And now I get to share how we do it and how we're embedding this and the truly exciting plans that we've put in place. So going back to the question that we asked ourselves that I articulated at the beginning, what if we brought inclusion and diversity into the heart of our joint business plans, effectively ensuring that it's a prerequisite to how we do business rather than something that we work together in on along the way? So in 2020, we set up a pilot group with that objective in mind. we asked a diverse group of suppliers, from big brands to own brand to world foods and local suppliers, to be part of this journey with us. We wanted to create a scalable program that would put inclusion and diversity at the heart of how we do business, and importantly, ensure that the program was accessible for all. It was stretching and ultimately didn't just take those who were already strong on their inclusion and diversity journeys and make them stronger, but take everyone on the journey. And our plan was simple across three core areas. The first one being maturity scale. We created a maturity scale as a self-assessment to start the conversations on how we can jointly move plans where inclusion and diversity is integrated. And this helped to create a baseline, an action plan to move from left to right across the scale, from emerging to fully integrated. Now, this covers key areas such as behavioral, leadership, strategy, and resources. Fundamentally, it's not where you are starting on the scale that's key here. It's about the plans to drive belonging throughout every part of each business and moving along the scale. The second part is the commitment plan. So if we stopped with the maturity scale, we wouldn't be moving the dial forwards, and therefore the commitment plan was key. We focused across many areas of inclusion and diversity, from disability to race and ethnicity to age and generation, to only name a few. Now, this is a guide to help create a framework on moving forward on belonging. As part of collaborating and collectively driving the dial forward on inclusion and diversity maturity, a sharing platform was created, consisting of numerous case studies with live examples brought to life, enabling support to everyone on the program. Ultimately, using our collective reach to ensure that we are sharing and supporting. And the third part of the plan is a joint inclusion calendar. We asked ourselves the question, if every supplier was raising awareness for, say, Pride, there'd be over 1,000 different variations. So surely we could cooperate and collectively elevate awareness of inclusion events throughout the year and support new initiatives which help to give breadth to our 2021 plan and beyond. So over the past 3 months, each partner in this pilot group has shared, for example, their plans on International Women's Day, Ramadan and Eid, Mental Health Awareness Week, and Pride, and opening up opportunities to replicate plans, be part of the wider group of events, and celebrate together.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Sunyat, for sharing. I like particularly the joint activities together and to co-build together these plans. I think it's very engaging, and therefore also you can discuss the key issues, right, together with the partners. What about you, Jamila? Tell us what.
Yes. So how? Well, I would first say it is important to start somewhere, because we like to say internally, done is better than perfect. Okay. So as we said earlier, we were building the plane while we were flying it. But it was also a great experience, you know, building something from, I would say, from scratch almost with our employees and with our partners was just a phenomenal experience. But let me tell you, you know, let me share with you some critical steps, right, to start. And with that, we'll share specific examples at how we did it in P&G. First, you need to establish what is your business case, why it matters to you, why it is important for your business. Okay, and with that, get the right level of sponsorship. If you don't have that, it will be a pretty much tiring experience. And so it is important to secure those two. Articulate clearly the business case and get sponsorship. So for us, you know, I've been talking about the 60,000 suppliers. This becomes like a duty for us, not doing anything with that. Or most of our consumers are women. they will start voting with their money, right? So as said, it's the right thing to do, but it's also the smart thing to do. So building this holistic business plan was key at P&G, and with what resonates with us as a business, it was important to articulate that. And that helped significantly. Then when you have the right to get started, really, really, then it is important to be curious about what you have in your supply base. Who are those companies that are diverse? Who are, for us specifically now, who are those companies that are women-owned or women-led or women-empowering companies, okay? And then with that, when you have a good read, you know, sometimes it's very difficult to get the whole read, but when you have like a good read, then you can start putting together what could be like your ambition on supply diversity, and you can start defining what could be like a first target. And then very important, and exactly as what Sinead has explained, it needs to be integrated in business strategy. It cannot be just pushed on or work done aside, you know, or bolted on. It has to be built into business strategy. And the way it is translating in P&G is that, yes, we do have a supply diversity strategy that explains where we are intervening, how we're intervening, you know, et cetera. But then every organization unit has a supply diversity component and KPIs that they need to deliver against. So that was our way to make sure that for every unit, organizational unit, they do have some commitments to supply diversity or inclusive sourcing. Okay, so now that you have the business on it as well, okay, good, what do you do next? Well, you need to obviously help people understand better, right, what we're talking about, develop best practices, and most importantly, engage everyone with you, not only your buyers, but also other functions. It's not only a purchasing thing, right? As we said, it's a business-led intervention. So purchasing, marketing, communications, quality in the plant, like all those people need to be trained, educated, and be supportive. But of course, as we said, it's not only about the internal world, it's also about the external world. And you need also to make sure we're creating a momentum with our external partners, training them, inspiring them, engaging the conversation with them. So once this is done, then you will need to start putting, you know, means to measure your progress and ways to report this progress. And this is where the digital tools play a big role. And so I know many companies still report on Excel, which if this fits the need, great. We've gone a bit further in P&G because we've developed, automated tools, ways to really track, spans in a very easy way as soon as a supplier is tagged, accordingly. And finally, engage with subject matter experts. Let's not reinvent the wheel because there is so much known out there and so much being worked out there. Just engage, you know, with people who are in this, allow me to say, industry. So for us, we've obviously reached out and even partnered with many of them. And I will just name a few with the WeConnect of this world, who are really the expert of supply diversity, of helping us identify women-owned companies, helping us with certification. But of course, as well, the Women's Forum, which I will talk about in a few minutes, and also, you know, UN Women and all big credible entities that have spent enormous resources and time and money to drive those topics. So I would say, try not to reinvent the wheel. Just get curious about what is already available around you. So that will be like the how and some examples from P&G.
Great. Thank you so much for sharing this with us. I think this is very, very useful with this 6 steps of how to start a supply diversity or inclusive sourcing program. So having been doing this work for several years now, Jamila and Sinead, so maybe we start with Jamila. What do you think are the challenges and opportunities for companies on this space that you can share with us?
Sure, yes. Well, over the last 5 years, I would say there were quite a good number of challenges. But I like how you say it. It's more, these are more opportunities. So let me then just probably drive a comparison with the US. If you look at the US, they have a pretty clear playbook right? The norms, the definitions, everything is well set, processes, certifications. It's really like a question of wanting to do it, but the foundation is there. Well, in Europe, and I'm not even talking about the other regions, but in Europe, despite this being a topic for more than 10 years, because supply diversity is not just a new topic in Europe. There are many companies who've been trying to drive it for, again, I said more than 10 years. And I would say, in my point of view, we still made very, very little progress. And when I try to sort of, you know, give myself an explanation, I think it's really because of the infrastructure, which is still nascent after 10 years, or just simply missing. Okay, so we owe to build that infrastructure for Europe, yeah, and for European-based companies, so that we really help them adopt such programs. And so in order to do that, as you said, we looked at it as an opportunity to do something. And we've co-created with the Women's Forum, you know, what we call the Daring Circle for Women Entrepreneurs. This is basically a coalition where many like-minded companies are really trying to put together, you know, this foundation. And I would even say a toolkit for companies who want to get started. First, you will get the diagnostic tool that has been developed with the consulting firm Kearney. And really, that tool tells you, as you answer the questions, it tells you where you're at from a maturity standpoint. Are you like a beginner or an expert, or where you're at in that journey? And that is important for you to know. And then over time, this tool will evolve to even recommend you what you need to do next to continue nurture your program. Okay. And we felt that was important for companies, because otherwise they need guidance. Okay. And guidance that is easily accessible, because again, as I said, this is a self-diagnostic program. Then the interesting one was the legal guide that really helped you demystify anti-discrimination laws in Europe, and especially in the context of supply diversity. Because I'd like to state again here the importance about that. We're not here to allocate business to a diverse company because they are a diverse company. It's really about offering equal opportunities to them, no more than that. But this is very important, okay? And by that, but we're also offering you know, support in all the identified gaps, be it capacity building, be it, you know, access to funds, et cetera, et cetera. But it's not an automatic allocation just because of their profile. Okay, so that is important. But anyway, we needed to develop something like a tangible legal guide for companies to understand there is a major difference between positive discrimination, right, and what suppliers diversity or inclusive sourcing stands for. Okay, so that is one that is that has been a passion topic for the last 4 or 5 years, and I'm sure it will continue for many years. The second one is about, okay, wait a second, I'd like to invite more women to own companies to bid for my programs, my projects, my needs, but where do I find them? And this has been as well, I would say, a big struggle. So we need to be able to identify faster women-owned companies. So we've partnered for that with We Connect International, which is this NGO that is very active outside the US to help meet and help connect buyers and women-owned companies. Okay, so they have now a new platform called We Community, where when you become a member, you can then surf on that platform and identify all the women-owned companies that are today members and meet with them, exchange with them, invite them to your bids. Finally, the third one, which is a growing one, it's all the E&I data transparency, okay? This is very much key if we want to, you know, assess the progress on E&I at suppliers within their own walls, okay? It is important that every one of us play the game and become more transparent, because that's the way for us to see how we're developing, how we're progressing, and then to be celebrated when progress is made. Unfortunately, today, E&I data intelligence is really not much existing. There are a lot of certifications here and there, but they are not covering the total spectrum that is needed. Okay, so I would say for those that are in the audience, if you want to get started, I mean, I would be very happy to welcome you in our Daring Circle with Women's Forum, where you continue building this infrastructure that is missing. And if you have any idea on how we can get better E&I data, please let us know, because that is a big, big area of focus for us. So my email address is on the slide in case you have any thoughts, any opportunity you see for us to partner on.
Great. As I see, there are so many opportunities to grow in this space. And thank you so much for sharing this. I would be interested also to join this Daring Circle. So I will be in touch with you, Jamila, for sure. So we go back to CINET. What about you, CINET, for co-op? What are the challenges and opportunities that you found?
Yeah, I suppose from this question as a perspective, kind of what's next? Why stop here? And the answer to that is that we won't. This program that I talked about, the three parts, is unique because it takes everyone on the journey and it's inclusive and accessible for all, integrating inclusion and diversity into our ways of working. And it helps to build partnerships on a much wider set of values. So we're currently building a platform that will allow us to roll this out to our entire supply base so that we unlock wider collaboration, wider reach, wider cooperation, and create a fairer world for all. And we'll be rolling out this plan later on this year to our total supply base, a challenge, but a necessity and an opportunity too. So there are broader challenges ahead. And as we emerge from, an exhausting and traumatic year, millions are facing into the devastating effect that this cruel pandemic has had on their lives. And we know that there's a long road ahead in our own country, and perhaps even greater one in other parts of the world, with many countries still in the terrible grip of the pandemic. Few have been immune to the COVID impact, but it's clear that some have been hit harder than others. And when shocks come, they're always felt by the hardest, from those who are already the most vulnerable and least equipped to cope. So only the well-off can stockpile food, for example. Social distancing is really different when you live in a high-rise flat, and not everyone has broadband at home. Many don't have a friend or family member that they can call upon when they're feeling anxious. The inequalities and unfairness that's existed long before the pandemic grip our communities, and even harder today. So if we collectively, genuinely want to build back different and better, then this has got to be a decade of collective action, of coming together, where decisions are taken and implemented for the benefit of communities, so that we can address the inequalities that have plagued our world for just simply too long. At the heart of every co-op, there's always been the idea that by coming together, we can all improve our situation and make sure that nobody gets left behind. So we'll take the action to address the interconnected structural inequalities in our country, be it about skills and employment for young people, diversity and inclusion, mental well-being and education, or access to food. And as we find out what works, we'll look to build partnerships to grow the impact that it can have.
Great. Thank you so much, CINET. I think that we are all aligned that this space has so much opportunities that we can explore. And the good news is we can explore it together in partnership. So I think this is the great opportunity that I can see going forward. We have several questions already, so I don't want to miss, because we have 10 minutes left. So I just want to make sure that we go over the questions. I think this is for Jamila or maybe for CINET, if you have the answers. Would you award business to women lead supplier over another supplier?
I think we alluded to the answer a few minutes ago. Well, if it's the only criteria, then for sure not. Okay, it has, again, as we said, it is a business proposal. Supply diversity is a business proposal first. It tackles you know, the social imperative, but it also needs to make business sense. So we will, of course, award the business to a women-owned or women or diverse company, assuming that their proposal is equal, right, to others. Okay. Now, this said, when they're not ready to work, especially with large corporations like P&G, what we're doing is we're sort of helping fill the pipe by supporting those companies through acceleration programs, capacity building programs, you know, access to finance type of programs. And that is what we do to make sure that they get ready to at some point in time join our supply chain. That's one. Second thing, what we're doing is if that company cannot access directly, but they have, you know, the right to succeed at some point in time, we will also invite them to work with our own suppliers, meaning supporting our suppliers who will ultimately support us, right, as a tier two supplier. They will join our supply chain, but via our tier one supplier, if this makes sense to you. So the quick answer is we will not allocate just based on the diversity criteria.
Thank you for the answer. Siniat, do you want to add something or?
Yeah, I think at this moment here it's probably worth just, as part of the discussions today, we've talked gender focused and beyond gender as well. So just to give, I suppose, the co-op view on this, you know, we're enabling a collaboration of different supplier partners to come together and share. And it's really important as part of our program that we ensure that we're inclusive of all plans. And as I mentioned, this covers a breadth of focus areas and facets and objectives. So whilst gender is incredibly important, our commitment plan, we've stood up case studies across sexual orientation, disability, age and generation, parenthood, mental health, race and ethnicity, nationality, socioeconomic status, religion and belief. And we've collaborated with Dial Global on this to help focus on these facets, encompassing all areas of inclusion and belonging. So I suppose it's more around inclusion at the heart of a business that we would partner with a supplier, regardless of the facet, the characteristic. It's about the culture.
Thank you for that. Another question is, Elite Network has 12,000 members plus, only a handful are from supplier companies. What do you think LEAD needs to do to bring suppliers to help pursue our mission?
If you want, I can go first. I mean, I don't have like a recipe as to how we can bring them along, but we do need to bring them along. Yes, we do need to leverage like all those great platforms being LEAD, right? Like a significant, a scaled platform. So yes, it's a super powerful platform to help drive awareness, like what we're doing today, right? Make sure people understand that there is this thing that is called supply diversity or inclusive sourcing and makes a ton of sense for businesses. So driving awareness is a clear, if you allow me to say, even a responsibility for platforms that are of the size of LEAD. The how, and by the way, we applaud you because this is exactly what you're doing, right, with this very first step. And then the second thing is how, well, I guess this probably will be a good conversation to have with the different key stakeholders on your end to define what is the most efficient way, because there are multiple ways we can think about.
Sinead, do you want to add something?
Yeah, I think part of this question is for the LEAD network itself, really. But fundamentally, we're only going to create a movement if we keep on talking about things. That's exactly what we're doing in terms of putting it into the heart of our joint business plans and making it part of everyday conversations with all of our suppliers. And then we will expand it further and we will think end to end and we will think the total supply chain. But how do we make sure that it is part of that every day, every communication, driving the dial forwards? And then we will start to see that movement forwards.
Great, thank you. I hope that answers your questions, Mick. I would go to the next question from Janet. How long does it take to get to where you are on this journey?
I'm happy to go first on this one, if that's okay, Jamila. So, it's a continuous journey. I don't think there's ever a start and a finish point within these journeys. But what we did last year, as I mentioned earlier, is we took a massive leap forward. And we did that by piloting first, because we needed to make sure that we could build something that can scale to all of our suppliers and that it was easy to implement. If we put difficult barriers in the way, it would potentially just fizzle out over time. So by actually road mapping and road testing with the 10 suppliers that I mentioned earlier, what we've been able to create now is some rich and great kind of valuable feedback, so that when we do roll out to our entire supply base later on this year, we can accelerate that journey and continue to really make a difference.
Well, I mean, similar to you, Sinead, I think it's a journey. I don't know whether I hope we will see an end not too long ago, but you know, who knows? But clearly, it's a tricky question, because it all depends on the intentionality, right? And it all depends on whether you've been able to get the right level of sponsorship. I would say at P&G, we've been very lucky, because up to our CEO, we got the right to push down and to integrate that into business strategies. That was the key fundamental first step. So if you don't get that first, it might take very long. But if I try to answer with everything we've been doing internally, we are today year 5 in the program. We really started back in 2017, back 2018, we were talking about it. We were, as you said, piloting here and there, some programs, but we really kicked it off officially something like 2 years ago. And after 2 years, we already have a very good understanding of how much we spend today with diverse companies. And that's globally, not in Europe, not in US, but really, truly globally. We've been spending a lot of time and money in building the systems as well internally, the infrastructure internally to communicate, to track. So we're not yet fully there, but we've already made great progress. But think of this for us, with all of this intentionality, the support system we needed, we are like year 5 and we still have a long way to go, like all the companies I know.
And last question, what would you do differently, if there is anything that you can do differently, and why, if you would start all over on this topic again?
Oh, that's a really good question. And I suppose answering from a specific on our supplier diversity program that I've been talking about today, I would invite more suppliers to the pilot group. And whilst that could have created more challenges, and we had a fantastic array of different companies of breadth and scale, as I mentioned earlier, I think it would accelerate us on the journey. So, for example, on a weekly basis now, I'm inundated with some of our supply base saying, how can we put part of the pilot journey? So it would make the rollout easier. So probably be braver and bolder.
Thank you.
Yeah, Yeah, in the same lines, I would say when we started, we were so wanting to have our own program well-cooked, mature, good enough, so that we then share it down our supply chain. If I was to do it again, I would probably, as you did, Sinead, like start since day one with the suppliers, not waiting for our program to already be well articulated, right? I mean, we're still at the start of the journey, if you think about it. And really, we've engaged with like dozens of suppliers around the world, like almost hundreds of suppliers around the world. And we see the value. We see the value of diverse thinking. We see what it takes to look at business through their lens. So, so definitely would have started the engagement with the external world earlier.
Thank you so much for all these great insights. And we are now at the top of the hour. Thank you so much for Sinead and Jamila for sharing this. And I wish you luck for your programs. And I'm looking forward to keep in touch with you in this space. And thank you for those who join us today. And I just want to remind you that there will be a LEAD conference from 6 to 7 October. And the registration is now open. So we'll invite you to start booking your seats into this LEAD conference. Thank you so much, everyone, and see you in the next LEAD webinar conference. Have a good day, afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.